Aisha, and I'm a former host of Mocha Single Mothers by Choice, or SMCs. Like you, as an SMC, I decided to become a mother knowing I'd be the sole care provider and parent for my children, at least at the outset. The Mocha stood for Black, so I'm using the word Black, and I'll be discussing being a single mother by choice from a Black woman's lens. You'll connect with all the interesting and fun things about this non-traditional path, like discussing which sperm to use and some hard truths about fertility and the realities of dating as a single mother who doesn't have a co-parent to rely on occasionally, and what it's actually like to parent as an S&C. This is the Black Single Mothers by Choice podcast. I am just surviving right now, still in survival mode, but I think I'm seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, navigating deep school related issues with my kid and getting that insight as to what goes on with her day and what things or people are influencing her day. Yeah. And my garden, getting that up and running. And that has been my saving grace and keeping me just a bit sane and trying to navigate the whole new change in mask mandates. I think that's a lofty bar, because many of these kids are coming from homes where the parents don't really care about other people either. Mm-hmm. And it's just, no, because I was at a PTA meeting with the Board of Education, and these parents were like, it impinges on my child's right to have to wear a mask. And moms with children with compromised immune systems were like, I really wish people would wear masks so that my kid could go to school and experience the same social engagement that your child experiences, right? And so I think some people just don't care. Schools are going mask optional as well. The school board, the school system has made it clear that they hope that people continue to wear masks so that we protect those who have compromised situations. So that's the approach my school is taking in my home. Mm-hmm. My daughter knows that she's keeping her mask on, and both of them are really good at wearing their masks. I think I shared with you that at the beginning of the year when Omicron was high, I actually upgraded their masks from the cloth ones to the paper ones and to the KN95s. And it was interesting to find that last year in December, November timeframe, my youngest kept coming home with colds, runny nose, mm-hmm. cough, and was wearing masks. But in January, when we were in the midst of the Omicron surge, I switched the little one to KN95s because she's not vaccinated, and no colds, no runny nose, no nothing. And then just last week, she started wanting to wear the same mask that her sister wears, which is the regular paper mask. Mm-hmm. And then she had a cold. She came home with a cold, runny nose, everything dripping. And so this week we put back on the KN95s and everything is cleared up. As long as my kids are comfortable wearing masks, they are going to continue to wear masks until things really die down in our general area. And they go to the playgrounds and no more. Like at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, yeah, we want to stay away from the kids who are not wearing masks. And now, since I know I can't control other people, I tell my girls, you have to wear masks. And they just go and they do. It's interesting for me, like we had an event yesterday as well, a Girl Scout event, and it was the logistics of it that usually catches me, right? Because I'm never on time. I'm used to always being on time. So I'm always halfway flustered. And because I always have both girls with me, I'm lugging the toddler with me who does toddler things and it's all mm-hmm. over the place. And Noelle is super energetic. And so trying to get them ferried off to their various events. Did they have food? Did they have water? So I'm always so caught up in the logistics and trying to transport my kids from one place to the other. I barely recognize other parents except to say hi and really make brief and short chit chat. So there's not always enough time to get into the where's your husband, blah, blah, blah. But mm-hmm. I'm also in a more liberal kind of space just by osmosis. And mm-hmm. so it's just like, even if I were to have conversations, people would be like, I'm like, yeah. And I think I consciously cut them off at the pass. I'm like, yeah, I'm a single mom. I'm doing everything. I'm doing all the things. Yeah. And I think it's something that I just learned over time uh-huh. to just do. And I think it comes from when I used to be an instructor. How do you make chit chat with strangers all the time that's not uncomfortable, that's superficial, and keep it moving. So it's just like, yeah, no, I'm a single mom. I'm doing all of this. And yeah, I need to double check to see what that's like if I have to drop two kids off. So I always gravitate more toward the operational and the logistics of things, as opposed to the whole, what do you do? And I personally never talk about what I do, right? Yeah. I have people who still don't know what I do. And coming to DC was quite jarring for me for that very reason, because people are like, I'm so-and-so, I work on the Hill. I'm so-and-so, I work for Amazon. We're talking about dating and when things like careers and when things like SNC status enter the picture, right? So again, I dip my toes into dating and I'm just like, so I'm on one of the apps where it doesn't let you go any further until you make a decision in the moment. And then it gives you a bit of time to decide if you're going to connect with this person. And so it just feels very rushed. Anyway, so I connected with a gentleman. And at some point along the way, I felt like we were at different stages in our life. Now, to his credit, he didn't immediately ask me about SMC or my parental situation, custody situation, until probably like the third conversation. He knew I was a single mom. He knew I had the kids and that they were young. I knew that he had a kid who is now away at college, right? There, the similarities is that we have kids. The similarities is that we're in the same age demographic. The difference is he's an empty nester and I'm pretty much, my youngest is two. So I've got about another 16 years to go in this journey. When I sense those disconnects, I try to go back and I was like, dang it, this application makes me make the first move. And I'm like, I'm looking for casual, he's looking for a relationship. So we had to eventually have the conversation about we're in different places, but I'm cool, I'm chill, I'm not in a rush. I understand your situation, do you? And we'll connect when we can. But at one point he did ask me, so I don't mean to be prying, but are you mommying, doing this parenting thing by yourself? And I was like, yeah, I've got the two kids. So it really is a solo gig here. And he's just like, was it the divorce? I was like, oh no, the divorce was 10 years ago. No, I went to a sperm bank and I got sperm and I had my babies. And so he's just like, he was like, I never would have guessed. That's interesting. I was like, why would you? He was like, oh, I just assumed they were from your divorce, but why? It'll naturally come up. So we had a dating episode in season one, and this is season three. I think, and I talked about a suitor in season one. I think what's shifted, a couple of things have shifted. One is the language I use. I'm intentional about the language that I use. I said, with season one, the suitor was like, what's your situation? I said, I use a sperm donor. And he's just like, is it a sperm donor or just a dude that conversation? I learned my lesson with this conversation. I said, no, I got sperm from a sperm bank. So now there's no, oh, but was it really an ex that you're calling a sperm bank? No, it was actually a sperm bank. So there's concrete language that I use this time. I've definitely seen an uptick in the number of stories that talk about fertility and infertility in the Black community at large. So this year alone, we probably had 3 to 4 television premieres. We are seeing a number of different articles. Hera and I will be in an article. So we are definitely seeing an uptick because I think we are helping to change that a little bit and helping to bring the conversation around to hear other voices and other perspectives. I think we get a lot of energy. I think we get a lot of ideas. I think we get a lot of thoughts. It feeds our souls to just be participants and kind of leaders in our space. We love our people. Now, I will say that while we have seen progress, it's almost like 2 steps forward and then a step back, because we still encounter some of the same frustrations we typically encounter as Black people trying to change the narrative and trying to get our voices heard, in that industries are geared toward a particular audience who they perceive as their main audience, and that's who they try to cater to, right? Even though the numbers and the data might show something different, right? And so what I'm getting at is that I think these institutions are typically led by non-people of color, individuals, male, white male individuals. And so I think they still come with a perception. And I think in the US, there is still that avoidance of race relations, that avoidance of institutional racism. And I think that when you have an industry that refuses to see you, regardless of what you know to be true, regardless of what you know the numbers to be, we are looking for Black sperm, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, we tried, we couldn't find it. It's like a piece of lint on my shoulder, just flick it off. We tried. You start diversifying the room. First, you have to acknowledge that there is this problem, right? And I think that the fact that there is avoidance because it's tied to issues with racism, race relations in this country, there is that avoidance of the issue and the topic altogether. And you really can't fix something that you either don't acknowledge or refuse to acknowledge. And that's part of the problem. And so then you don't have the people in the situation who can think outside of the box, right? You need her and I to think outside of the box because we are literally outside of the box, mm-hmm. right? But we're trying to interject, hey, there is a problem and we want you to address the problem before it starts to address your bottom line. And I think that in these institutions, there's institution things. So when you typically think of a single mother by choice, you're thinking of an affluent white woman. When these same mm-hmm. institutions think of Black women, they think poor single mothers who are on welfare, who are leeching from the system. And so they're limited by their perception of who their customer, who they would like their customer to be, rather than who their entire customer pool is. And also, who doesn't want white sperm? Pod, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. If you like what you've heard, please share this podcast with your girlfriends, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about the topics covered in this episode. So email me at mochasnc@gmail.com. If you found value in the topics covered, consider making a donation using the link in the show notes below. Till next time, Pod. Bye now.